morning. My name is Monica Cornetti, and I am your host for the weekly Gamification Talk Radio program. We air this program every Saturday from 11 to 11:30. Now we're in Central Daylight Time in the U.S., so 11 to 11:30 Central Daylight Time. And if you miss the live session, you can download any of the recordings on demand of any of the previously aired programs that you might have missed over the past couple of years that we've been running this show. We specifically started doing the Gamification Talk Radio for human resource and training and development specialists. And sometimes we bring in people that are a little outside that scope because I believe that we'll be able to use the information that they give us to help us in the area of talent development, because this hot trend of gamification is really just so new. It's still really an infant in the marketplace, and there are so many people that we can learn from to learn how to increase engagement and solve problems and use it for employee training and development, building our brand loyalty. And so my guests each week include different gamification gurus and platform providers, end users, who can give you different tips and tools and strategies and techniques that you can start looking at how you might be able to apply them in your day-to-day leadership of your department or your organization. And when you're thinking about delivering training and development, for example, what are we doing that's different this week than what we did last week or the week before or the week before? And haven't you found that usually you have to be so head down and so focused on what's going on and just making things happen and just churning it out, we never really get the chance to step back and look at new strategies. And so that's why we bring you just this 30 minutes every week so you can learn something new, give you a chance to percolate, and give you a chance to think about how you might use it in what you're working on in your workplace. And this week, one of my favorite people in gamification, her name is Ann Coppins, and we're going to be looking at learning communities and immersive experiences. Now, Ann is one of those gamification gurus I was talking about. She's consistently in the top 10 ranking of gamification gurus across the world. And what's rare about that is that first thing is that Ann is a woman, because when you look at that list, there's not many women on that list. And then also because Ann is in what is typically, when we look at gamification, there's different ways you can use gamification. And we've got employee facing and consumer facing. Quite honestly, the employee facing hasn't gotten the same amount of attention that consumer facing has received. And so not only is Ann a woman, but her primary area of expertise and where she's using it is also in that employee facing and building these communities. Ann has an extensive background in e-learning, and she's earned a reputation for bringing solid gamification strategy and fun to create a more enriching learning experience. So today we're going to look at applying gamification to learning communities, creating a more immersive learning experience by stretching people's thinking about what those learning communities look like, and then applying that to first-person learning, which is always a little bit different. Before we get started, let me just give you this brief background on Ann. Ann Coppins is Chief Game Changer at Gamification Nation Limited, where the vision is to make business and learning more fun and engaging. She's an award-winning business coach, learning and development professional, author, and speaker. With Gamification Nation, Ann offers gamification design services and online learning programs which are designed to encourage winning behaviors and improve business results in the areas of sales, recruitment, learning, and productivity. We have so much to talk about today, so Ann, thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Monica, for having me back. It's always good to know that we're the only two ladies in the top 10, isn't it?
And I'm always excited when I see some other women, you know, make the board. Yes. But and then I go out to find out who they are. For our listeners, you know, Ann and I have been on the phone for 45 minutes already talking, and I was like, we need to get started. We got to start the show. So we can talk all day about what we've been Absolutely. Working on. So thank you so much. And I know that the listeners will just really enjoy you today as much as I enjoy talking with you. So let's talk about a learning community. First off, let's go ahead and define that for the listeners so we know what it is, so they can put it into context if they're not quite sure what we're talking about terminology-wise.
What I mean with it, yeah. Yes. I mean, learning communities can take different shapes and forms. I mean, what I encounter, a lot of multinational organizations I'm working with have internal, let's say, learning groups set up either on an LMS system, a learning management system, where they facilitate social learning and sharing. Others have, let's say, membership programs. And in some cases, especially on the smaller scale, the SME scale of the businesses, they're using social media networks to set up groups and hubs for social sharing. So learning communities are actually traditionally how we learned. We had a campfire sit down. We're going way back in history here, but you know, you had a campfire sit down around the elder of the community, and he would share his wisdom with the people of the community, who would all then make their own draft and their own version of the story. So the reality is that this is a proven technique for learning from way back in evolutionary times. And somewhere along the track with evolution and technology, that has gone missing, but is now making its way back into corporate structures and into learning in general. And this is where technology is actually facilitating this, because thanks to social media, you can set up a Facebook group or a LinkedIn group on a topic, and you can close that group off to just only your community. So what I'm working on for some clients is to have an internal community. And I usually help them define what it is that they want people to do, because gamification is encouraging behaviors. So, and typically the learning community style behaviors is social learning, for one, meaning that when you learn something that you share, actually, I've read this great book and this is what I've taken away from it, or I've just completed this course, these are my key nuggets of information. So there's sharing, which already establishes a deeper connection with the material from the user's perspective, from the learner's perspective. Then as soon as you start contextualizing that into, let's say, an example, where this is what I've done as a course. Now I've applied this in such a situation and I'm giving a report back on, actually, I've applied this theory on XY situation. This is applied learning. This is ultimately what most of us as learning professionals and L&D professionals would want everybody to be doing. The reality is not the case. And this is where gamification can actually help people realize that if you play, make it fun and make it playful to share, make it rewarding to share, and make it interesting to read what others have shared. So from that perspective, it's creating, I suppose, peer interest through a little bit of peer pressure as a dynamic, and then the social interaction element, some of them, the elder wisdom being passed on, some of the rookie application being shared, and maybe some of the mistakes you're making coming back into the community, which makes a community really valuable to an organization. It's like, look, I did this course. This is what I applied it to, but it went wrong.
Right.
That's
good. That's really good. And I have so many questions about that, because, you know, you can see, you know, just from that explanation, I can see so many things that could go well. And really, yes. And then I see so many ways that, you know, it could possibly spin downward quickly. when we look at like different types of people who contribute, some people are really that kind of killer personality who have to kind of kill everybody else's ideas because they believe theirs are the best or theirs are right. So I'm going to circle back around and hit these. I was just thinking about, and you can do these learning communities in just about anything. I have a... Yes. So I'm in this Facebook community of speakers who, there's like three or four major companies that contract with trainers and developers to develop and design and deliver training for them across the United States. And so we have this little Facebook group, and there's not anything that's really off bounds on there what we can learn in that learning community. We share on different topics, we share on activities, we share on delivery systems, and we even share on happy hours. So like, where's the best happy hours in this town that I've never been to before? Where should I eat? What should I make sure and do while I'm here? Which is really great, because
Cool.
the learning curve that's cut down and you're not out there. So there's no limit to what can be learned, although within your organization, happy hours might not be the thing you want people talking about. So let's say that I work for a company and I've heard about learning communities, and I hear that Anne, the woman I should be talking to about getting a learning community set up, she's the professional, the go-to in this. So they say, hey, I've heard about learning communities, I want to get one set up. What should I do? What would be the first thing you would tell them?
Yeah, my first question will always be why. Why do you want it?
Yeah, good.
And I mean, I think that should be the question always when you start on gamification. Why? What's your business objective? What do you want at the end of the day? So, for example, I'm working with a conglomerate of academic institutions who are sharing a fund of money to promote climate change in a positive way. And when they said, we want a learning community, my first question was why? And they then said, well, actually, we want to stimulate action, climate action, positive climate action. That's the end result. I said, okay. Then we need to structure everything that we do towards encouraging people to take action and providing them with the tools to do that. So on the one end, so I see it as a four-phased approach. So I usually use a little framework that I came up with. And the first step in it is attraction. So you need to attract people into your community. The reason why you want to attract them into it is like a game, is you want people to voluntarily come to your learning hub because there's something in there that's of interest to them. So enticing them in on a cause is actually a lot easier than enticing them in on, let's say, the corporate mission. But if, for example, the corporate mission also helps me as an individual achieve what I want to do, let's say career progression maybe, or a development of specific kinds of skills, that again might be a puller into the community. So that might be the thing that attracts me in to the community. If I see in the community that there's a lot of activity, the first thing I would then, I suppose I'm jumping ahead a step, is I'm attracting them in. After attracting them in, now I've got them, now I need to engage with them. So I need to encourage them to take a first step, to take a dip the toe in the water kind of approach and say, make your first contribution, or check this out, check out this course. What did you come here for? So probing questions so we can help the learner figure out, okay, where do I want to go with this? And then once they've made their first contribution, you want to stimulate ongoing contribution. So, for example, in the climate learning community, what we're doing is it is aimed at master students, so university level students. So a lot of these haven't got real life experience from working in companies or a limited amount. And they need to build up a CV where you have extracurricular activities or achievements achieved. And one of the things is if you contribute regularly and the contributions are of good quality and people rank your contributions as valuable, you get the chance to be invited to become a moderator for the forum. So that way you're stimulating even further learning because now you're curating what others are posting or suggesting different tones, asking follow-on questions, encouraging again deeper learning of everybody else. And then obviously as an end game, I always should say to people, what's the end game people should have? Is it, and for this climate organization, it's definitely action. We want climate change action projects, whether that's an incubator project, whether that is an activity that you did locally with your family, or whether you started a big charity event, for example. It could be a whole range of things, but their end game is an action. So in a corporate setting, the action may actually be that you achieve that promotion or you reach a certification or you've encouraged or become a mentor to somebody else. So, you know, there are levels that you can work in to encourage deeper learning, because effectively learning happens for adults, primarily through putting it into everyday context, by applying it and then talking about it and then reflecting back and relearning on it. And that's where a learning community with game stimuli can absolutely do a lot of good.
That's good. Now, when you're looking at like the organization that you're talking about now, it was universities?
Yes.
So would they be doing that on some kind of social platform that's already in existence, or would they create something new within? What would you recommend as a platform for that? Or would you, not necessarily a recommendation, but would you suggest something that's a little bit more exclusive to them, or something more social? Okay. That's really what I didn't want you to. I didn't want you to say a specific platform. I was just wanting direction you would take them. You're taking them more proprietary, something that would
very much, very much. I mean, I subscribe to, and it's one of my mentors. I'm part of a membership group where one of the mantras is actually it's also a learning community. In fact, where one of the mantras is you own the race course. And effectively, that means that wherever you have knowledge that is proprietary to you as an organization, and because we're talking universities, a lot of research, a lot of actual subject matter experts will share information, but it is proprietary still to the individuals and the universities. So for them, it's important to own the platform. And what they've basically done is added in a forum component on the website, which is effectively like a social media component. I mean, in corporate worlds, I would also recommend pulling it inside. It only makes sense to go on Facebook or LinkedIn if it's, let's say, all different companies coming together. Then that can work quite well. But for anything that concerns proprietary knowledge, I would keep it on your own platform so you also have all the controls.
Right. I like that.
Because I would say is you need to curate for sure.
That's very good. I own the racetrack. Is that the mantra?
Yeah.
Own
the race course.
Own the race course. Yeah, that's good. All right. So
you invite other people to play on your race course.
but we own it. Don't forget that.
We own it.
That's our track, right? All right. Yeah. That's good. Now, when you're looking at developing this community, Ann and I are members of different communities out there together, which is probably how we met originally, is that we see each other out there in contributions. But we know that in communities, you have a small percentage of people who actually contribute material. Mm-hmm. And so how can you, when that contributing material is part of the essential elements of learning, how can we encourage that? How do you encourage that in your community?
Yes, so there's two ways. So some of the community activities are based on courses that people are also taking on the same platform. So the course will immediately prompt you to say, well, explore this framework and then comment and discuss it on how it applies to the country you live in. So, for example, it's on renewable energy. And it's about business models of renewable energy companies. So go find a local company of a renewable energy type that you have seen and that you actually like and discuss their business model as far as you can see how it works without, you know, sharing proprietary knowledge that maybe might give, you know, competitive advantage away. But, you know, it's what you as the outsider can see. So you're asking people to actually go and apply what they've just learned into their local community and then share that back as an example with web links, things that are in the public domain. And where possible, and for some of the PhD students, we have closed groups in the community where they're working on very specific projects where obviously the confidentiality is more important. And again, there we ask them to peer review the contributions of others. Now, peer reviews are an amazing technique in gamification, but in learning in general also, providing that the contribution or the feedback is of a good quality. So we also ask the feedback receiver to give a ranking on that was helpful. Yes, I will make a change because of what you've said, or you've just put new innovations or new ideas into my mind. I need to explore more. That's a top level contribution or peer review. Whereas, you know, I like the way you write that as a review. That gives you nothing.
Right.
You know, yeah. I can do nothing with that. I can't expand on it. So if you have good, valuable peer reviews, now typically I ask the topic leaders to become curators, and that they stimulate the first question, the first follow-on deeper learning element. So we had a lecture on carbon disclosure for organizations. There was a number of questions the speaker asked. We entered them into the forum, invited people to comment on it. And then when they made a comment, the curator would actually ask a follow-on question. So they kept on exploring and giving more, so that the comments didn't become real platitudes of general ideas, but actually people started delving deeper into the material and making real suggestions based on what was discussed in the seminar. So it can work, but you need to have an active curator. So it's not something you set up and it runs itself. It runs itself only by being active in it as the leaders of the community.
Yeah. How big could that community be realistically and still have space, time, enthusiasm for a large percentage of people to contribute? Do you have an idea on that? What would be I could see you have a big community that maybe you break down into subgroups or something like that.
Yes. Yeah. And that's typically what happens. I don't think you can actually put a number on it. If it's in a corporate setting, it can be as big as the whole organization. Mm-hmm. And because you're working in a closed organization or a closed setup, that's also the limits that you set on it, and that you take away the right of contributing as soon as somebody leaves. So that is one limitation. The other one, if it's an open one, like in this case, where a number of universities come together, in fact, the numbers are unlimited, but the discussions will become very much focused on the topic that you're most passionate about. So if you're really into renewable energy, that's probably where you're going to stick. If, on the other hand, you're much more into creating smart cities and sustainable cities, well, then that's where you're going to hang out. So you do see a shift of people going into pockets. And that's why we set it up so that people could become forum leaders for a specific topic, so that you're actually working on something you're also passionate about. And that can be extra kudos that you take onto your CV and we could certify for them. So from that perspective, there is definitely a scope. But yes, it will become groups that tend towards or gravitate towards topics.
Right.
In communities I've been part of, what tends to happen is that I'm part of a community for business growth. And what tends to happen is that different questions come up as and when your business grows. So you will evolve through them. So, and they see the same in a learning community. If you're a new starter, a rookie in an organization, you will start at one place. But then as you develop your career and as you develop on different projects, you'll probably find that you'll go into different groups and dip in and out some and leave some for forever and never go back. So, and I think that should be allowed because that's also the nature of learning. What's relevant to me today may no longer be relevant in 5 months' time.
Right. I guess what you're suggesting too with that, and not to put words in your mouth, is that it is something that you let it happen organically, that group sizes change, some people come, they leave, but you don't say when it gets to this size, we have to cut it off at that point and start subgroups. And yeah, because I know I've been part of organizations that were in rapid growth, and in order to try and manage that growth and not lose people because they get lost in the cracks, they start to try and put these strong guidelines on it, and that shuts things down faster than anything, because now you've where there's organic growth happening for a reason. And
exactly.
And to just try and limit that and say, well, that can be reproduced automatically over here is a fallacy, because there's a reason
exactly.
it's happening here. And this, so that's really good. Now, when you talked about people going out there and taking what they're learning and perhaps moving it and doing some firsthand learning by applying it in a certain situation and then bringing mm-hmm. that back to the community. Is that how basically that you take firsthand learning to the next level?
That's the starting point.
Okay.
For sure. I mean, I'm totally excited about all of the new technologies that are becoming more and more available, is that we can push it to another level again. But then that's, see, first person learning is how we learn to walk. We fell over, somebody stood at the other side of the room and told us, get up, come on, try again, and, you know, encouraged us along the way. So first person learning is how we did pretty much everything when we were very small. It is innate in us to still do that when we're a bit older. So having that ability through technology to go back to that, and actually it doesn't even have to be technology. I mean, games as a way of learning will give you feedback. I used to take groups to a game-based learning organization, especially sales teams. So the King Arthur game is all about sales and negotiations. And what typically happens is that you have to trade and barter and go and find supplies to produce your goods. And what happens in the game is that people display their natural personalities in how they do business. And we use that as a reflective exercise on how, basically as a feedback exercise, on how you deliver sales and what could you do different, because people get so absorbed by the play elements that they forget that this is not real and their real traits come out. So on an online scenario with things like immersive games where you can actually take on a persona, we can do the same. So you have all of the devices like the Oculus Rift and the Samsung version of it and Google Cardboard, allowing us to shut off all outside distractions and go in experiencing the world as if we see it for the first time. And there are hotels who are giving guided tours like that. So you're already learning firsthand how things work. And that, I think, will give another level of firsthand learning experience that, A, I'm excited about, and excited about designing.
Yeah.
And so I'm working on one scenario like that for diversity, on showing people what happens cross-culturally when you're in a diversity scenario. So a manager in Europe and an employee in another part of the world may have different ways on how they see they should be working together. So they'll get instant feedback, but through a first person learning as you scenario. And I think that will make learning shorter, but way more effective and very applied straight in the moment, because you're asked to make that choice. From a design perspective, a lot of learning designers are not going there because it takes a lot more time, because you have to design way more scenarios. But I would urge organizations to look into it, because when you see the results, people have actually really learned some new skill as opposed to cognitively taken on board a concept of what you should be doing.
Right. That's very good. Chances for the actual application of it in the workplace intensify at that point then, that this
Absolutely.
Is, wow, I didn't see it that way before. I really do get this, that old light bulb on top of the head, that aha moment going off. Very good.
Exactly.
Very
exactly.
good.
And it's great fun. It's great
yeah,
fun to do.
At the same time, right. Hey, we're out of time, as I knew we would be, and I want to make sure that people have your contact information. So down in the text, you can see that it's ann.coppins@gamificationnation.com. Your Twitter address is...
Actually, I have two. If you want to hear about gamification, is @gamificationnut. If it's me personally ranting about rugby and all sorts of other things also on top of gamification, Then it's Anne Coppins,
Ann Coppins, that's
just my
good.
name.
And her website is gamificationnation.com. Anne writes a blog every week that has a ton of good, she has a video blog and a ton of great information in it. So connect with her and keep learning that way. My website, monicacornetti.com/gamification for just different information about where you can learn more from people like Anne, different platforms, just a ton of great free information out there. Also, you can look at sententiagames.com for our latest certifications that we're offering in gamification. And just a final closing thought before we close out today, anything that we missed that you want to make sure we talk about or anything you want to add?
Actually, I want to tease people and say that, you know, I have a blog 3 times a week.
I'm
yeah,
sorry, Anne.
Mondays, it's gamification mechanics. Wednesdays, it's always gamification stuff I love. So that could be random. And every Friday, it's a bit of a feminine flavor to gamification. So if you're curious about it, come and check it out. But in any case, learn firsthand, join a community and make the community come to life. I think that's the way forward for learning.
Good, very good. Well, thank you, Anne, for time out of your busy, busy schedule. Anne's got so many great things going on that we can't talk about right now, but we will in the future. And thank you for taking time out of that to visit with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me, Monica. Always enjoy the calls.
Thanks. We'll see you again next week, everyone.
Bye-bye.